And the recess has not begun to bite yet. It's just at its early beginnings. And it's a company that, I remind the Commerce, I repeat what I said, they claim that inflation was beaten. You know, we've defeated the dragon of inflation. I think that's what they said. Well, it's not true. Never was true. Inflation is taking off now with a vengeance in all countries. The official figures understate the level of inflation. The level of inflation is serious, and it means a serious attack on living standards everywhere, even in the most advanced, even in the wealthiest countries. You have the rising price of oil. Let us remind ourselves that it was the rising price of oil that was the factor that punctured the boom. It wasn't the cause of it, but it punctured the boom in 1973-1974. It's led to quite a severe recession at that time, which was the background for a ferocious stepping up of the class struggle with revolutionary consequences. At that time, some commoners lived through that experience. You know what I'm talking about. In Britain also. The price of oil now has reached a record level, unprecedented level. It's I think, over 110, isn't it?
115.
I'm out of date. And it's heading towards 120. It will probably get towards 100. But, of course, there's a limit to this. Once it reaches a certain point, the same thing will occur that's happened in 1973-74. It will puncture like a wheel, an overinflated wheel going over a nail. It will puncture the it affects profit margins and so on. And there will be a slump. What will happen to the price of oil then? The price of oil will fall, which will hit oil-producing countries, which at the moment they're doing very nicely, thank you. But Russia, in particular, will be threatened by this. Venezuela, there'll be consequences with a sharp fall in the price of oil. That's on the cards. And therefore, the situation is quite serious. Now, the economists, I didn't intend to spend much time on economics, but I'll just make one final remark. These bourgeois economists are supposed to be clever people. They're quite childish, as a matter, superficial and childish. They're actually put forward with a straight face, having spent 20 years explaining that globalization was the thing, and of course they had a point, as I've said. And that the world economy was inextricably mixed up, which is the most decisive fact of this epoch. It's the most decisive factor of this epoch is the crushing domination of the world market. That makes socialism in one country completely untenable. If a huge country like Russia or China could not achieve autarky, how can Venezuela or Cuba or any other country resist? This is a fundamental question. Yes, but then they go on to say, now they change the tune now, hoping that nobody will notice. They now say, oh no, all right, there's a recession in America, but it won't affect the rest of the world. As if you can, for goodness sake, what kind of nonsense is this? It completely contradicts everything that they were saying before, and it's simply not, it's demonstrably false. They said, oh, China will save us. China will not save us. Chinese economy is a very important element in the equation, but it will not compensate for the loss of the colossal American market, which we dealt with in the past. Now, the question is, and by the way, there's a quote here from The Economist, the real question is not the technical issue, they say now, of whether the downturn will qualify as a recession, they're talking about in America, but how long will it last? The concern now that it can last for some time. Now the question which affects us is that we can discuss this quite a lot, but we can come back to this. The question is, what is the effects? What effects? As far as the class struggle is concerned, now I mentioned inflation. This oil inflation, but there's also, even it's noticeable in Britain, this food inflation. Food prices are spiraling, incredibly. And I'm firmly convinced that part of this is speculation. It always occurs. They see that there's an opening. There was a piece on the news yesterday that agricultural land in Britain is soaring. So, Andy, if you want to buy a farmhouse in whatever that backward agricultural area where your cousin, you can forget it or earn a lot more money than you do. Agricultural land is soaring. That's an effect of speculation in relation to food prices. Food prices are increased Colossally, I've got the figures here somewhere. Now, rather than look for the figures in my notes, this is the current edition of The Economist. You probably can't see what it says. On the front page it says, the silent tsunami. Just think what this means. The silent tsunami. The tsunami was a wave that wrecked whole countries, killed a lot of people. The silent tsunami, the food crisis and how to solve it. Let's see how they solve it in the moment. Allow me, Comrade Chairman, allow me a moment to quote from the editorial of this week's Economist. It says the following. Famine traditionally means mass starvation. The measures of today's crisis are misery and malnutrition. Listen to this. The middle classes, in poor countries are giving up health care and cutting out meat so that they can eat three meals a day. The middle class. Okay? The middling poor, that's an interesting expression. They mean people earning, the middling poor are people earning $2 a day. As far as I'm aware, $2 a day is what classifies someone for living in poverty, officially, but there we are. For the Economist, it's the middling poor. I'd like to see the editor of The Economist living on $2 a day. The middling poor, those on $2 a day, are pulling children from school and cutting back on vegetables so that they can afford rice. Okay, and there's 1.5 million people, 1.5 billion people in that category in the world. Those on $1 a day are cutting back on meat, vegetables, and one or two meals so that they can afford one bowl of rice a day. One bowl of rice. And it goes on. The desperate, because there are even poorer people than that, the desperate, those on 50 cents a day, face disaster. Now, just think, what it is. These are not just cold economic statistics, these are facts affecting thousands of millions of men, women, and children in the world. Roughly a billion people live on $1 a day, it goes on. If, on a conservative estimate, the cost of food rises 20%, and in some places it has, in some places it has risen a lot more, 1 million people could be forced back to this level, the common measure of absolute poverty. In some countries, that would undo all the gains in poverty reduction that they have made in the past decade of growth. Because food markets are in turmoil, civil strife is growing. I'll give some examples in a moment. And because trade and openness itself could be undermined, in other words, globalization could be, we've said this before, that globalization could be reversed and would be reversed in the case of a recession, the food crisis of 2008 may become a challenge to globalization. Now, this is the most important development. The economic elements, the threat to the global economy. I mean, if globalization starts to unravel, and that's inevitable at a certain stage, they will resort to protectionism. You better believe it. That really will pose the question of a deep slump, as occurred in the 1930s. Most people don't realize this. What caused the depression before the Second World War? That was not the crash of 1929. It was protectionism. Beggar my neighbor policies, and all the elements are there. That's why the economists, that's why the bourgeoisie seriously worried about this. The social effects, well, just look at it. Incidentally, Time magazine recently published an article with the title, Food Prices Can Topple Governments. And it's already toppled the government in Haiti. I don't know if the economists noticed that. There were food riots just a week or so ago. Of starving people in Haiti, that's the poorest country, one of the poorest countries in the world. A mass of poor people actually stormed the government offices, and the slogan was, we are hungry. Just that, we are hungry. People were killed. A UN peacekeeper was also killed. And the prime minister collapsed. Prime minister was overthrown. Now that's just the beginning. That's just a little warning. You see, these gangsters in America and Britain and the city of London, they say, oh, it's terrible, we're losing a lot of money. And it's true, the banks are losing a lot of money. I didn't give the figures, but the banks are losing billions, deservedly. And then the government comes and the Fed comes to prop them up. But we're referring here to people in America that are losing their houses. That's bad enough. But there are millions of people that are threatened with starvation, with death by starvation, in the short term. And by the way, what's the solution of the economy? They said that. The food crisis and housing. I'll give you three guesses what the solution is. More liberalization. Never mind about food subsidies. More liberalization is required. In other words, the mad logic of these gentlemen and ladies, let's not forget the ladies in the City of London, is that, well, food prices will rise, therefore there's profits to be made, therefore people will invest in producing more food, and therefore sooner or later the problem will be solved, you know, by the invisible hand of the market. Yes, you know what Keynes said about that? In the long run, he said, we're all dead. In the long run, when people are faced with death by starvation, now, today. You see, Collins, this is a devastating indictment of capitalism, that it cannot keep people alive. Can't even feed the people, never mind about improve their position. This is just an astonishing state of affairs. And these food riots have occurred, incidentally, in Haiti, prior to these riots, they actually cut the price of rice by 15% in a desperate attempt to solve the problem. It didn't succeed. There have been riots in Bangladesh. Bangladesh is faced with a revolutionary situation. I've not got the slightest doubt about that. There's been mass strikes, mass demonstrations caused by this question. 40% of the people of Bangladesh are on the semi-starvation line anyway. So it's a matter of life and death. Even China, by the way, is faced by rising food prices and is causing a stir anyway. And this is the general state of affairs. There's been riots, I think, in every country along the equator in the last few weeks. I'm not talking about a general abstract observation. These are facts. Not just in Côte d'Ivoire, the Ivory Coast, in the west of Africa, riots forced them to postpone the election. This is the last couple of weeks I'm talking about. Forced them to postpone an election. The president of the Chamber of Commerce of the Ivory Coast, Jean-Louis Billon, says the following: it's an explosive situation and threatens political instability. It's from the horse's mouth. In Egypt, which is an absolutely key country, we thought that quite some time ago. I know Ian's particularly interested in Egypt. There's been very interesting articles on the website. Please read, I know there's two websites now, please read Marxist.com as well as the excellent British website. There's been marvellous articles about Egypt, which is a key country. You see, I've met people, even comrades, you know, who ought to know better, who in effect argue, or echo rather, the arguments of the bourgeois, that everything's black, that it's black reaction, that there's no possibility. The Middle East is all black reaction, but it is entirely false. There is black reaction in the Middle East. There's the rape of Iraq and so on, that's true. But there's another side to the coin, which these comrades regrettably have not noticed. That is, in an increase in the class struggle. There's been strikes in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Egypt, in Iran. We have Iranian comrades here today, I'm delighted to say. Iran is a key country in the world revolution, comrades. Iran is heading in the direction of revolution after 20 years. The masses in Iran are fed up with the mullahs, the youth, the women, and so on and so forth. Strikes are illegal in Iran. Strikes are illegal in Egypt also, but the strikes take place anyway. The workers say, never mind about this. It would be the same in Britain, of course, if the trade union leaders were worth tuppence. Never mind about these anti-trade union laws. You can stick it in a very dark place. Stick it where you like. Never mind about your laws. We will go on strike anyway. That's occurred. It's occurring all the time in Iran. I hope that the comments will come in on this question. I won't say much more about it. Iran is heading in a revolutionary direction, and when that occurs, by the way, when it will occur, the mullahs are finished. They're in a deep crisis. There's a movement of the masses, which is not reported in the Western press. What kind of a revolution will that be? Will it be black reaction? Will they support the fundamentalist Razi, but the workers moving in Iran? You better be joking. It'd be a revolution against the fundamentalists, against the mullahs. And in Egypt, that's also a key country. There's a powerful working class in Egypt. We've had this marvelous movement. reported on the website. What's the name of the place? Muhalla, is it?
Muhalla.
Muhalla, yes. Big textile factories. It's marvelous. They called a general strike. Actually, they had the state had to intervene with police and armed force and repression to prevent it. There's been also bread riots in Egypt. Colossal increases of incidentally, in El Salvador, here's a couple more figures just for your information. In El Salvador, the poor people eat one half of what they ate 12 months ago. One half. Just imagine eating half. Well, perhaps it would do some of us good. But certainly wouldn't do the people in El Salvador any good. In Afghanistan, we've got the blessings of Western occupation. The Afghans now spend one half of their income on food. It was only 10% in 2006. Now it's half. That's an indication of a desperate position that exists. But in Egypt, the regime is in crisis. An enormous, marvelous movement of the workers, the women workers in particular. I advise the comments to read the material on the website. Yes, it's Mahalla Al Kobra is the name of the place, textile factory. But there have been also food riots. The level of strikes has increased drastically. Incidentally, the food increase in Egypt, meat has been increased in the last 12 months, not the last 12 months, between 2005 and 2008, to be exact. Meat has increased by one third, 33%, and chicken, which is a basic item in the diet, has increased by 140%. In this field. People can't live, and therefore there's been an enormous outburst of strikes. In 2006, there were 222 strikes in Egypt, strikes and demonstrations in Egypt. In 2007, it was 580. That's double, and they only prevented a general strike by means of repression, which of course cannot succeed in the long run. And therefore, wherever you look in the so-called third world, you've entered a revolutionary position. There's no. You're entering a revolutionary firm. There's no argument about this. Enormous possibility. The only thing that is missing really is the question of the leadership, which we must try to do something about. Now, it isn't just in the third world. In Europe also. It is true that Britain, for the time being, is lagging behind. Britain will catch up with the bank. Britain will be one of the countries worst affected by the collapse of the housing, along with Ireland, Spain, and Holland, I think, are the main candidates. But there's been an enormous upsurge of the class struggle. Although it's true that Berlusconi won the elections, in Italy. Italy is the sick man of Europe now. Italian capitalism is in a desperate position. According again to The Economist, a couple of years ago, the position is so bad that in order to solve the problem, in order to survive, if you like, and Italy is falling behind. It's falling behind Spain now. They were bragging a few years ago they'd overtaken Britain. Now, they've fallen behind Spain, and according to the latest projection, next year they can fall behind Greece. So that's a serious state of affairs. And they must do something drastic about it. They must attack. Everywhere they must attack. Living standards. Everywhere. Britain, of course. That's the next discussion that we will be having. But according to The Economist, in order to solve the problem, they would have to sack half a million workers from the factories, and the rest must accept a wage cut of 30%. Now, if you know the Italian workers, that ain't going to happen smoothly. They tried it with the previous Berlusconi government, and there was an outburst of strikes, general strikes, demonstrations, and he collapsed. They tried it with Prodi, the so-called left coalition, who did attempt, you see, the so-called left, so-called socialists, so-called communists, so-called democrats and progressives, they did cut. They introduced cuts which Berlusconi didn't dare to do. The result was that they've been now kicked out. And Berlusconi, incredibly, has come back. But, of course, he's won the elections, but he'll be sorry that he won the elections. And he will stick the boot in. Why not? He's 71 years of age. He will stick the boot in. No question about that. And therefore, there'll be an almighty outburst of the class struggle in Italy. Last year, there was a demonstration, I think it was last year, of 500,000 workers in Rome protesting against pension cuts. That's a lot. Yes, but it isn't just Italy. Italy you could expect with the traditions of the Italian workers, you might expect that. But in little Denmark, it's nice, quiet, little Scandinavian social democratic paradise. There was a demonstration a few months ago of 100,000 workers. Now, you compare the size of population, that's much bigger than in Italy. And Switzerland, I've already quoted, this is astonishing. The comments must read this article. Wonderful movement of workers where they threatened to close a factory in this little town of, what's it called?
Bellinzona.
A town of 20,000 inhabitants. They tried to close the workshop on the railways. The workers occupied the workshop. They welded the railway lines together so they couldn't get any trains in or out. That's quite a good tactic. And they went against the union leaders and so on and so forth. The solidarity committee set up every year. They collected, I think, £500,000 were collected in solidarity collection, all run from the rank and file, from the bottom, in the best traditions. Elected a committee that was not allowed to reach any decisions without consulting the assembly and so on. And they won. They also demanded nationalisation of the works. In fact, the program under workers' control. In fact, the program that the workers put forward, we could have written it ourselves. One little town in Switzerland, for God's sake. If you can have a class struggle in Switzerland, you can have a class struggle in any country.